Hello?
Hello?
Yes?
He'll be on shortly. I think we need to just be pound six, or star six, to be on mute.
Okay. Thank you.
Does have a melody to it, but now let's do it as Chapa. We can't hear each other, sadly. Some of the restrictions. Yeah, there's things with each other, but nevertheless, can chant along in the location. I'm going to do a number of repetitions of Mantra. Very, very powerful. Fire. Inner illumination as we prepare this meditation for a little bit longer on this last portion of our Vidaya Madhyayana 3 days. Om Tat Purushaya Vidmahe Mahadevaya Dhimahi Namo Rudra Prachodayat Om Purushaya Vidmahe Mahadevaya Dhimahi Namo Rudra Prachodayat Om Tat Purushaya Vidmahe Mahadevaya Dhimahi Namo Rudra Prachodayat Om Shaya Mahe Mahadevaya Dhimahi Mano Rudra Prachodayat.
Well, hey, welcome everybody. I'm Dave Kruger. Welcome to our four-part seminar series on applying the mind and brain sciences to strategic coaching. I appreciate those of you who have read my email, and especially those of you who have responded to answer the two questions I sent out. I know I got a number of registrations within the last hour, so you may or may not have seen my email. But the two questions, and I need everyone to be really aware of this, and this is in the email, to manage the background noise. Unless you're talking, please stay on mute, star six, and when you get ready to respond or comment, do star six again to unmute, but then stay on mute, star six, until you're ready to comment. Because with a larger number of people, we especially want to be sure there's no distraction. I hope you found the site where you will have downloaded, ideally, the outline. It's a detailed outline, 20-something pages, that has some work pages, resources, at the end. And the idea is so you won't have to take a whole bunch of notes so you can really listen and see if it makes sense and applies to you. So I need a mute, please. Star 6 from everyone. Star 6 from everyone. I really need – that's in the email. And as a reminder, I want to say it again. I'll put everyone on lecture mode, or I'll put me on lecture mode, so you don't have to worry about this. But I'd like to reserve a time for discussion at the beginning and the end if we really manage the background noise. So the responses to your two questions, if we were to sit down right now, what's the most important thing to you that you'd like to get from this series? And secondly, if you walk away in 4 weeks saying this is one of the best and most useful series ever, what would you walk away with? Now, these responses will shape some of my discussion. And I appreciate the ones of you who have already sent in some very thoughtful responses and questions. And I welcome each of you who've not responded to send in your answers to these two questions. It makes a difference to me, and it's why I do live teleconferences rather than some fixed format, so we can discuss and have an interaction. And I'll reserve time at the beginning and the end of that for that. Again, a mute if please, everyone be on mute, because you're not hearing how your microphone picks up even rustling of paper, even if you move across the room if you have a headset. Now, I'm saying that and being persnickety because we have a large number of people, but you also want to be aware of this for when you're working with clients. That's everything I'm saying is to help you better work with clients. So if I sound like a Dutch uncle now, this is only the beginning. I see from the registration that there are some old buddies attending as well as some new colleagues. I'll do my best to change up the stories so you won't get bored, or at least change the punchline. So if there are questions that come to mind after each seminar that we don't get to, then I'll encourage you to email me, and I'll do my best to respond and incorporate the answers in the next seminar. So does anybody want to add to or just respond now to either of these questions now that we're live? If you haven't seen the email and want to respond just to what do you want to get away, what do you want to get out of this, and what do you want to take away from it? And if you'll identify yourself first. Anyone dare? I know I see the number of people on this line, so we've got lurkers.
Hi, Dave.
In the dozen. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. How are you? My name is Pete, and
welcome. I was getting lonely there, Pete. Go ahead.
So I'm going through a major, very exciting sort of transformation in life right now due to COVID. COVID for me actually was a blessing because it's forced me to really evaluate and look at my business and my life and really take it next level. So for me, really mastering key sort of thought patterns in my life and really maximizing the mental component as I move forward in my new adventures. That's my goal for this, or at least have the tools and the practices and the knowledge to really, really make the next 50 years of life profound.
Well, thank you. And I think you really capture the essence of the experience and really the transformation that all of us have had, not only in engaging mentor coaching as a profession, but especially in the last few months of making the adjustments we've had. And what better profession could you possibly have than doing exactly what we do? We learn and train and interact remotely, online, audio, video, and You can work in cargo shorts every day. What more could you possibly ask? You know, I had already done 100% of my coaching by telephone. So the transition wasn't as big, but in making a transition from working face-to-face as a former psychoanalyst and psychiatrist, I've come to appreciate some things in addition to the mind and brain sciences, just in terms of how people phrase their sentences and construct their stories, that I'll share some of that with you and hope it'll be beneficial, because we can listen more carefully, and I believe we can get a lot more information from someone by telephone than we could face-to-face, because there's not the distraction. And Lisa even says, CTA, the reason, the official reason that we don't do video conferencing like Zoom is there's not the bandwidth in all the areas that we go. But she says the real reason is you can really pay attention better by telephone. And I think that's really true. When we ask a question, it aligns the energy field of the brain. When we focus, we are in a zone. When we attain that and sustain it in working with clients, that we can be aware of so much. And I'm here to tell you that intuition works and empathy work just as well, at least by telephone or by video conference, as it does face to face. So we lose nothing in the transition that we've made, some of you have made, to working in this way, and all of you have made the transformation to a new profession. It can be really, really exciting. So thanks, Pete, for the highlight on that. Anybody else want to comment or raise a question before we move into our material? And again, go back to mute. Whoever is not on mute, maybe that was coming off of mute. So I forgive you this time. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dave. Can you hear me?
I can't hear both of you at the same time. The one of you to the left, would you go?
I don't know which is my left and which is my right.
You're it. Go ahead, and then we'll come back. Thank you. Go ahead.
This is Sherry Rosedale, and I wanted to say hello. I wanted to respond to both of the questions in that I want to better understand and more fully understand my own circumstances. And in doing so, to obtain the necessary tools in order to change. And relative to the second question, I want to take those tools and implement them in a practical use of the knowledge and information learned from the series. I want to be able to apply the tools that I learn successfully.
Okay, thanks for that, and you've come to the right place. And we know in coaching, and we know from the mind and brain sciences, if you want to change or facilitate a change of a habit or create a new one with a client, not focus on the goal, because everybody has the same goal, but focus on the system. So we're going to be looking at a number of micro and macro systems of catalyzing change as mentor coaches, not passing on information. Because some of you have heard me say, if information or training or teaching were enough, if information were enough, we'd all be thin. We'd work out every day. We'd eat mostly vegetables. We'd have a lot of money saved up for the future. And a lot of librarians would be billionaires. So, in fact, information can actually backfire. You know, the boomerang effect is when you give somebody information that contradicts a view they hold, they'll argue more staunchly for their own position and end up more convinced of their original position. And the zinger is, the smarter someone is, the better they'll be able to do this. So you'll get exactly the opposite of what you want. More to come on that, though. There was the person to the right now. Would you please go?
Yes, Dave, this is Rose. I'm very excited about these sessions.
Hey, welcome.
Thank you. I'm interested in, from a scientific point of view, how mindset changes and what the practical tools are for changing mindset. And also, this is something that's been on my mind, and through various readings and from a spiritual perspective as well. And I was curious, this may not be in the scope of this series, but I have been thinking about the differences between conscious, mindful living versus habitual living, where we are subject to either good or bad habits. So those are just some areas that I'm interested in.
Okay.
And,
well, thank you, Rose. That will apply
to
you, and it will apply to every client that any of you have, of moving to a greater awareness and for each of you to really come to know your own story in a very exquisite way will put you in the very best position to help your clients and be a catalyst to facilitate their movement into a more optimum performance and story. Whatever your story is, whether it's life or money or wellness or relationship or any aspect or combination of that, but our story is what we create each moment. Whatever you think and feel and experience, you create each moment. And story, for me, is a very useful metaphor to talk about that. We're gonna return to that. So thanks, and I want to move into our material in order to reserve a bit of time at the end for discussion, for clarification, and questions. Okay, we're in lecture mode now, so you guys can relax and breathe freely. We're going to talk in our first seminar about a scientific system of mind, brain, and behavior. So in strategic coaching, the hardest thing we do is help someone make significant changes in their life or business stories. Part of this is because so many of the methods to facilitate change are contrary to the way the mind and brain work. In our first seminar, we're going to review and integrate some important disciplines to develop a scientific system of mind, brain, and behavior change and success. The next three seminars, we're going to apply those principles from mind and brain sciences to strategic coaching to facilitate changes that last. In the last really few years, we've seen revolutionary changes in our knowledge of the mind and brain sciences, neuroscience, cognitive and research psychology, quantum physics, behavioral economics, neuroeconomics, things that we can apply to strategic mentor coaching. These innovative new frontiers can be synthesized and integrated to help us become significantly more effective in our daily interactions, as well as our own self-regulation. The operating systems of our minds and brains are not fixed, but can be changed and transformed. We can rewrite mind software and rewire brain hardware to create new behaviors and new stories. We can engage in collaborative, co-created experiences to enhance client success. So by integrating the mind and brain sciences into the art of coaching, we co-construct a new story with the client. We shift from problem to possibility, from teaching to experiencing, from telling to listening, from observer to participant, and from educating to collaborating. That's the one characteristic I think that is most outstanding of coaching as a profession among all the professions, is that our framework is one of collaboration. And think about how different that is from all of the consultative and other expert professional arenas. We collaborate with our clients. And when you basically, with a client, know this, people will commit to what they help create. So that's part of what we do. So let's first look at operating systems. Behavioral patterns and belief systems downloaded especially from parents, teachers, society, in the first several years of life become automatic to operate without observation or awareness even. Neuroscientists estimate that about 90 to 95% of our behaviors and core beliefs are pre-programmed in the unconscious mind and operate on autopilot. We only rarely really think about where do these behaviors and patterns come from? What are the algorithms? They're mostly unconscious. This means that we can create two stories simultaneously that go in opposite directions. The surface story that we're conscious of. Remember, that's only 5 or 10%. That we run our lives with conscious intentions and aspirations. This is what I want from life. These are my goals. The shadow story can ghostwrite behavior in the other direction. And here's how that can sound as it finally consciously manifests. I really can't get what I want, or system keeps me from doing what I need, or I don't have what it takes, or I'm a procrastinator. Here's another example. The surface story, I want to create wealth. I want to generate more income and create wealth. The shadow story that may or may not be conscious is, well, I don't think I really have what it takes, or some people were born to have money, or it's unspiritual to have a lot of money. And here's one more. I want the cheesecake with the strawberry topping. That's the surface story. The other surface story is, I want to be healthy and thin. You see, I specialize in dual surface stories. I know these quite well. One of the first steps in mentor coaching with the brain and mind is to know ourselves quite well, to know our own story, as I mentioned in response, to have our own voice and its construction. We can know ourselves by developing first the capacity to be self-observers, and all of you are. Each of you are intuitive empaths. Google it. Read about yourself. From Benjamin Franklin's Poor Richard's Almanac, there are three things extremely hard: steel, a diamond, and to know oneself. Mentor coaching requires us to be insightful, reflective, and self-observant, first for ourselves and our stories, to have mindfulness of ourselves in order to be empathically attuned to the mind and experience of a client, to make it all about the client when we engage in mentor coaching. So I want to consider with you an overview of some contributions from different fields and then bring them together to apply in an informed strategic perspective for facilitating change. Here are some contributions from psychology and psychoanalysis. Empathy, the listening position from inside the client's experience, the subjective reality of how the client feels, thinks, processes, attributes meaning, and to engage clients to be empathic with themselves, because empathy is not an end in itself, it's a means to a better end. Theory of mind. And again, the basics of this are going to be in your outline. I'm going from the outline. I'm just elaborating from that. So keep that handy so you don't have to take notes, and you can see if it makes sense for you. A theory of mind, the ability to see the world from another person's vantage point, is essential for us to understand the mental model of their thoughts and intentions, as well as their behavior and emotions. Neutrality. That means essentially remaining equidistant from both sides of a client's dilemma or their ambivalence or the surface and shadow stories, not taking sides and allowing the client to resolve the dichotomy, not picking one side for the client, because it just gives the illusion of resolution. And you're functioning for the client. You're facilitating codependency when you do that. Learn from the old story. The past teaches the present, so not to repeat compromised parts of the old story. When an emotion becomes a foreground issue, especially when it derails progress and creates a state change, it has to be dealt with first to regulate a state of mind. I believe that regulating states of mind and managing emotions are a crucial success strategy. Two recent studies, Scientific American Mind, Harvard Business Review, found that the primary quality of success, the primary ingredient of success in executives, was self-regulation and self-reflection. And now that's only, in my view, because they did this study in executives. That's for everybody, every one of us, every one of our clients. The other huge success strategy, understanding our own dynamics and the dynamics of others. That's something that really achieves a foreground position with a lot of executives that I work with. for them to understand their own dynamics and the dynamics of others to know how to interact. Basically, social, emotional, and conversational intelligence. And here's one, the intersubjective third. Two people in a relationship create a third entity, the relationship, the co-created third. The relationship, what you and your client create, has the power to change, to transform. It takes on a life of its own. Everything in coaching occurs through the relationship. Positive psychology, emotional intelligence, moved us to see health as much more than the absence of disease and to form a foundation of our focus on possibility rather than problem. The mind can't, your brain, let me start over, your brain can't tell the difference between anxiety and excitement. It registers, it activates in exactly the same way. How you frame it determines how you proceed. If you go back, head for cover, see it as danger, you'll stop. If you see it as possibility, you engage a growth mindset. What are the possibilities here? How can I do better? Same with studying organizations from appreciative inquiry. Dr. David Copywriter found that, and I'm departing from psychoanalysis here, but this is something I wanted to make a point, and I don't remember including it anywhere else. If you go to an organization and you ask about problems, which usually consultants do, you boot up a problem mindset. If you begin by asking about possibility, you boot up a possibility mindset where different possibilities are considered. There's activation of new portions of the brain. That's exactly what we do in coaching. We don't ask about the problems or ask why. We look at what the possibilities are. Cognitive behavioral therapy, currently the most widely used talking cure in America, at least, holds that it's not necessary or even important to someone to return to the origins of a problem in order to overcome it. But it's more productive to focus on correcting the present and moving forward. And what we know from neuroscience, if you go back into a problem, even to explore it, to create a better solution, whatever the reason, it etches it further in the brain. It makes it easier to move into that problem the next time. Instead, we focus on now and next, the choice architecture of looking at the present and the possibility. Focus on the exception rather than the problem. Rather than giving energy to the problem and understanding the problem, focus energy on the exception, which is to say the solution. This means that change can occur more rapidly. Some brilliant research in this area. So here's a specific application from psychoanalysis to mentor coaching and change. Transference is the repetitive ways of organizing current information based on and current experiences based on past experiences. It's the organizing process of how we perceive and attach meaning to people and experience, meaning that we simply boot up a particular state of mind, a mindset, and that mindset has a predetermined way of perceiving and processing information, just like a software program. Transference simply means we use software developed in the past to read a current experience, so we may need to update our software. This process utilized by the mind and brain is helpful because it allows us to use vast experiences to quickly read and respond to situations. But at times it can be limiting because the perceptions and solutions have become outdated. The old story will get activated, will come alive alongside the new story being created. So in mentor coaching with our clients, we focus on the new story. We don't bother the old story until it bothers us. That is, we don't engage it. We don't ask about it. Ask about why and how do you understand. If necessary, we address a belief or an assumption of the old story as it manifests right now, as a bias, as a blind spot, as a misread, just enough to inform a present choice rather than repeating the familiar one. So there's a white paper, reminds me of a white paper I hadn't thought about that might be interesting and helpful to you that's related to this focus on the process in coaching rather than the content. Now, the coaches I've trained are familiar with it, but I'll send it all to the Kruger rookies that are online. It's about behavioral and connection patterns with others, about how we recreate patterns with others. I'll send it to you as an attachment. So this is what all that means. A client is always teaching us exactly what it's like to be him or her. They create an in vivo demonstration of what needs to be known so that we can teach it back to them out loud. For example, if you're working with a CEO who is annoyed and alienated everybody in the executive suite, guess what? She's going to begin to annoy you. That's her job description, to show you her issues. She can't do otherwise. Her neural wiring and attachment patterns get activated in the relationship with you. This is part of how you succeed, to respond differently than everyone else in her life and engage her in a process of change. So the first thing you do, alongside getting totally present and focused, is to put your ego in a blind trust. Don't take anything personally. It all has a meaning, and it's all about the client teaching us exactly what it's like to be them, to collaboratively write an authentic new story for them. Here's some contributions from neuroscience. Mirror neurons. In 1996, neuroscientists at the University of Parma in Italy noticed that certain neurons fired when a monkey performed an action, and they also fired in exactly the same way, in exactly the same spot in the brain, in the monkey who was simply observing the action. Think about how recent that was. You've heard about mirror neurons all your life. 1996. This revolutionary finding provided a brain basis not only for empathy, but also social connection. Mirror neurons are not specific cells, but they're a function of actual networks in different parts of the brain that reflect behavior and feelings. Mirror neurons help us directly and indirectly imitate actions, create experiences. For example, stick out your tongue at a newborn baby, and the baby will immediately return the gesture. A baby smiles, and her parent smiles back. Mirror neurons are instrumental in acquiring empathy, language, and social behavior. This mirroring activity explains how children download beliefs and behaviors beginning in the first years of life. Later, for example, we experience and take in how our parents handled money. The behaviors, messages, attitudes, biases, meanings, and regard of money, as one example. And here's a sidebar comment and highlights. Also, how our clients are always unconsciously taking notes from us while we're talking about other things with them. How comfortable and confident to be as a professional, to charge what we're worth, to engage empathically and fully without it being about us. Mirror neurons help us understand emotional and social contagion. If you see a person being poked with a needle, your pain neurons fire as if you were being poked. We unconsciously imitate what we witness, ranging from movement to behavior patterns to yawning. This is why nobody wants to sit next to me on a couch when I'm watching an action movie. I twitch when the hero throws a punch or dodges a bullet. Now, I do want to point out, at least I'm identifying with the good guy. Mirror neurons enable us to empathically understand and to appreciate another's point of view and see ourselves as others see us. It's a form of self-awareness. Now, the brain's error detection mechanism is important. Our brains detect changes in the environment and send strong signals to alert us to anything unusual. These error detection signals are generated in the orbital cortex, just right over the eyeballs, and closely connect to the amygdala, the portion of the midbrain that first registers emotion. Now, the importance is this. Most of what we do every day is habitual, from how we get out of bed, shower, dress, the pre-COVID drive to work and deal with challenges. Once we do something repeatedly, the brain hardwires these behaviors to conserve energy. To change any of these habits takes more energy in the form of attention. And we conserve energy by not investing attention to change. Even our physiology resists change. If you fold your arms in the other way that's natural, this triggers discomfort and sends signal to return to the right way of doing things. Now, this is important because every client you work with, at every step ahead that is new and different, is experiences change and it's discomfort. So they have to overcome with you the discomfort to do it and be reframed as an indication that they're moving ahead, as a signpost to progress every step of the way, because this is what changes their operating system. We'll come back to that. Things in the environment that are unexpected or different, anything other than what's normal, gets immediate attention by the error detection mechanism. This is true for what we see and hear as well as ideas. So this error detection mechanism explains a number of things that we experience in a regular way. Why the media focuses on bad news? Because it gets our attention. When we're problem-focused, it energizes us. That's the most common addiction any of us have, is up to a problem. You ask somebody about something, they'll immediately get energized and activated, telling you all about their problem because they're an expert at it. And we return to the familiar because at least we know how it's going to turn out, because it always will and always has, until we story bust, until we break the script as coaches. Why a road accident makes people stop and stare. Unexpected danger demands attention. Another simple example, why we can easily name the things that someone does, that we do wrong while struggling to list the strengths. We notice differences more easily than confirmation. So our minds and our mind maps include our beliefs, filters, values, patterns, and even hypotheses about how to best function in the world. These maps become an operating manual for what we do, even though we may not be conscious of them. Yet, they're learned implicitly and practiced so often that their connections are hardwired into the brain. Here's a real practical application. Gap in performance has more to do with mindset, the state of mind, than with intelligence or motivation. In mentor coaching, this means that even when someone wants to change and is willing to change, the brain is triggered to be on guard when changes are introduced, and especially when they're put into action. This is why we usually avoid giving advice in coaching. If the advice is unfamiliar, the resulting uncertainty sets off the error detection response. So even if the idea is familiar, the client could take the advice as a challenge to his or her status. So we have to take into consideration why a client may reject an idea even before appraising it. During coaching conversations, we highlight or challenge a client's story, maybe just their beliefs or hypothesis. These conversations can bring a client's map, their attachment pattern, their behavior pattern, into conscious awareness as a beginning step to recognize what's become automatic. Simply by looking at what doesn't work, for example, reappraising or reframing can upgrade that map to current circumstances and appropriate application. Somebody's launched into a problem. If you have, as I do with every client, request permission in the first session to be able to interrupt, I will interrupt and ask, what's the possibility here? Instead of reentering that old story that will further etch it. So by examining these maps, they're fit for a current circumstance, and contrasting previous beliefs or statements that may not work currently, this uses the error detection mechanism to assess and even navigate change. and a burst of pleasure comes with new connections of insight or an aha experience. With an aha, a moment of insight, three different parts of the brain light up and someone is vaulted into a state that is more synthetic, integrative, and creative. If they go into a problem or reiterate what they know or are simply given facts or information or directives or orders, no part of the brain lights up. So we help clients improve their maps of the world and find ways to help their maps make sense and then perhaps fit into current situations. So basically, here's what neuroscience, in summary, teaches us about mentoring and facilitating change. And this is in your outline. People have prior knowledge that hugely affects how they hear and respond to new information. For all of us, existing knowledge is the beginning of new knowledge. It's where learning starts. Here's an example of failed empathy and not recognizing this principle. Several years ago, many years ago, I want to distance this as much as possible, way back when I was practicing psychoanalysis, I offered what I thought was a really poignant interpretation to an analytic patient. My patient paused and then said, "No, Kruger, first you've got to be with me before I can go someplace new with you." The most succinct and brilliant supervision I've ever had about beginning with where someone is right now. We're going to return to that. Prior knowledge is physical, real, and persistent as a neuronal pathway in the brain. In other words, anytime there is a fact or a belief or any kind of pattern, emotional attachment, it's an anatomical reality in the brain, and you don't just suddenly introduce a new way of doing something or a new fact and expect for your client it's going to overwrite what's already there. A teacher can't present a simple explanation and remove an existing neural network from the student's brain. We're going to talk about how to use that, how to do it. Three, if we ignore reality, it'll get in the way of new information and change. So as we mentor and co-create change, we have to start where the client is, not where we are. We can't provide the tools for solving problems before they know and have engaged with us in alliance to look at what the problems are. So, to continue. Four, partly because it's complex and partly because it's subjective reality, people aren't always aware of their prior knowledge. And this prior knowledge is concrete. It's an actual pathway and neuronal networks in the brain. So this is what we have to consider in collaboratively looking at co-creating a new and revised story for the client, with the client as point of reference, not ghostwriting it, not running in plays, and not making suggestions. Contributions from quantum physics. Quantum physics help us understand energy fields and adds how the activity of an observer affects what we observe. This is very close to what psychoanalysts call the intersubjective experience, how two people in a relationship and a dialogue create a third entity of this co-created experience, as I mentioned. Quantum mechanics offers the notion of systems theory to understand a change in any one aspect of the system affects every other aspect of the system. You introduce a change collaboratively with your client, the family system, the system of the business. They're going to give pushback because they have error detection mechanisms. It's going to affect everybody in the system. So you're going to have to help your client look at how to contend with the response to change instead of people having it in for her. This simply means that this is the way their brains work and they want to have things return and want to do you the favor of getting things back to normal. So here's a little bit more about what quantum physics teaches us about mentoring and change. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field, and focus selects that frequency. all the channels of radio or satellite TV are available, and we choose the channel, the frequency, out of hundreds of possibilities. And we each transmit a frequency through our thoughts. So if you want to change something in your life, change the frequency, the channel, change your thoughts. Now, the bad news is if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over. And this is a bit like The Secret. And the Secret really talks about the energy field of the brain. There's a short white paper on the neuroscience of The Secret on my website, Mentor Path, under the articles tab. So what this means is the law of attraction basically is based in quantum mechanics. If you lay a nail and a paperclip, for example, side by side, nothing happens. But if you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paperclip because molecules of the nail become aligned in the same direction. So it's the same way with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, you have power. That's exactly what powerful questions do. They focus the energy field of the brain of our client. Think about how when somebody's well into their third paragraph and you having permission to do so, simply ask a question, it immediately changes their focus. The prototype of this is the absolutely inconsolably upset infant who's crying and just nobody can do nothing. But when you jangle car keys, boom, that focus instantly is state changing. That's also what a good question does. Now, in the film The Secret, they spoke of three steps, ask, believe, receive. I think two of those three are right. The law of attraction won't give you what you want. It won't give you the energy to sustain the process. It will only give you the energy to sustain the process. It won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway if you visualize it or align the lotto balls for you. Trust me on that one. I can save you some money. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals, to way to use your power to write the story that you want. If visualizing were enough, every kid would have a pony. Now, my favorite grandmother offered her critique of the film The Secret 4 decades before it was released. She said, "Wishes don't wash dishes." So in my view, the real law of attraction, more accurately, is ask, believe, and create, the ABCs. The paradox is we don't attract what we want. We attract what we focus on. So in addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field. And you can tap into that and resonate with this field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein called this the unified field theory. Basically, we, with a human mind and body, are a bundle of energy, and we interact with another person who also is an energy field or with a larger group of that energy field. I think a natural experiment of negative and positive energy fields, I've done demos of this in workshops, but a natural experiment is, back in the day at least, the NBA plays 84 games a year, 42 away, 42 at home. Every team loses about twice as many away as they do at home, no matter where they are in the division standing. And every team wins almost twice as many at home as they do away. Positive energy fields at home, negative. When you got 60, 80,000 people, most of whom are sending negative vibes to somebody, you just don't do as well. And this also translate to the percentage of certain shots of players. It's really incredible research. So here's some contributions from social psychology. We're all embedded in vast social networks of friends, families, coworkers, and more. Dr. Nicholas Christakis, a professor of medicine at Harvard, studied social networks following 12,067 people for 32 years. What he found is that there is a contagion not just of states of mind, but also in the induction of various traits and behaviors, including obesity, unhappiness, drinking, smoking, exercise, healthy diets. For example, if your immediate circle of friends is obese, your risk of obesity is 45% higher. If your good friend becomes obese, it increases your chance of becoming obese by 57% in the same time period. If your good friend's friends are obese, even if you've never seen them, your risk is 25% higher. Now, what causes this may be mirror neurons, that there's a contagion of, for example, we know the contagion of states of mind, how confidence is a state of mind that's immediately contagious. We're going to return to that for the business of your coaching and making a professional recommendation. A recent study at Princeton, Emily Pronin, found that when one person tells a story and the other actively and empathically listen, the brain patterns begin to align and have a synchrony. Their neural activity mirrors each other. As soon as one listener fails to comprehend or disengages, boom, that synchrony stops. So understanding the influence of social networks can help us understand things like health and emotions, market crashes and bank runs, the spread of product adoption, and also the contagion of value and ideals. A couple of more just brief overviews. Contributions from Buddhism. Buddhism teaches us that when one area of the brain is engaged, other components will not be engaged. In other words, when we want to stop and relax and think less, we engage the right hemisphere. When we stop talking and thinking, we do that by meditative focus, by breathing. Further engagement of the right hemisphere occurs by focusing on feeling and experiencing the body as a unified whole. Now, this leads to another kind of thing that we can value, I think, and appreciate in mentor coaching about mentalization. Mentalization is the awareness of mental states in oneself as well as others. It involves awareness of these mental states from multiple perspectives. This process focuses on function, on process, rather than content. So stress, overwhelm, excess emotion can hijack mentalizing and impair the process of self-awareness and self-regulation. So one thing that we do is to be sure that we're grounded and centered as we engage with a client. Then we'll be able to provide a model and co-create with a client the awareness of and perhaps even focus on ways to develop self-awareness, regulate states of mind. We're going to talk about that specifically next seminar. So a growing body of neuroscience research confirms the power of examining the sequence of one's thoughts and internal dialogue, of becoming an impartial spectator in our own mind in conversation. Examine the internal conversation that immediately precedes a decision. For example, if you don't follow through on commitment, and if you have a plan, what's the thinking process that you did? Did you bargain with yourself and say, well, I'm going to do it next Tuesday? Did you defy your own authority and say, well, the hell with it, I'm going to have a good time? Or did you in other ways stop yourself and then make it make sense? Pay attention to new ways of thinking and behaving, because even though they're uncomfortable at first, they can initiate rewiring the brain. Focus attention on what's positive, on what you want, rather than on what's negative or what you attempt to avoid. The unconscious can't tell the difference between positive and negative focus. So be sure you're focusing on the right thing of what you want rather than what you don't want. Play to win rather than play to avoid to lose. Incredible research on that now, too. Cultivate cognitive veto power, the focus and choice of stopping an impulse or even a thought before you act on it. And what we do in coaching, map new possibilities. Reflect on your own expectations and values to align with those goals. So, mindfulness is a mental mode of engagement in the present moment without evaluating or emotionally reacting to the situation. Mindfulness strengthens the brain's ability to pay attention. Mindfulness meditation can increase the number of neurons in the brain region that mediate attention, compassion, and empathy. It strengthens your immune system. There are direct measures of that. It improves psychological function of insight, creativity, and productivity. So, the benefits of mentalization development are very real and very proven in terms of neuroscience. Here's a summary of neuroscience contributions. Psychoanalysis addresses coming to an end of an old story, but not how to strategically create a new one. Quantum physics recognizes the participation of the observer in the creation of reality, but omits motivation. Neuroscience illuminates the workings of the unconscious and the conscious mind, but disregards the spirit. Psychology helps us understand the development and the role of effectiveness and mastery, yet remains silent on brain contributions. What we can do is bring awareness from all of these disciplines together to apply and inform strategic coaching, which is why I think you guys are here, which is why I'm here. So, in collaborative contingent conversations, in a brief summary, asking the right question has more power than giving people the right answers. Appreciative inquiry, which is exactly what we do, can yield better results than seeking and solving problems. So this process is one of collaboration and of contingent conversation. Collaborative in that both parties make contribution to an ongoing interaction and conversation. Contingent in that there's no script, but what each person says is responsive to what the other person just said and vice versa. But you've co-created a map with the client and a map of focus and a success map of where they want to end. So there are new narratives for old brains. We learn through stories. Stories are how we understand and how we remember. A way to hold information and make sense of things. Defense lawyers know this, so do little kids standing next to broken vases. Stories create both personal mastery as well as connection to others. Marketers have figured this out, which is why we see so many stories in advertisement. So this is why basically then I use the term or the metaphor story so often in terms of coaching, of co-creating a new story, of understanding a client story, because really understanding the essence and the neuroscience of story, of how we resonate with and understand someone and how we can collaborate to create a new story is the art and the neuroscience of coaching. A successful resolution to a compromised past story is to transform it by learning from it. We become wiser for it. We become more adaptive. We shift from repeating the old story and its programming to recognize, own, and assess that story to decide what to change. When patterns are broken, new worlds emerge. And this is what we specialize in as mentor coaches. Breaking the script. We are experts at change. We extract the lesson from the past experience to write a new narrative with the client in a current context. The new story overwrites the old story, and the latter disappears in this transformation. The past becomes memory, like our lap when we get up to walk, rather than an active intrusion on the present. This places the memory on a library shelf in our mind that we can choose to revisit if we want. We remember in order to forget. The story we use to guide our lives makes it easy to navigate, since our brains have created neurons and pathways for those habits to make them default decisions and to conserve energy. They're a lattice work of little models. So our stories orient, guide, and instruct. The narrative we construct navigates our lives. So in essence, by recognizing and observing and owning a story, a life story, for example, we can assess each component, each storyline, and decide what to change and map changes. This is all something we're doing as coaches, not necessarily something we're actively doing with a client or having a conversation at this level. You can then facilitate authoring new beliefs and program the changes to transform identity in a new story. So next week, we'll discuss states of mind and neural conditioning. We're in conversation mode now, so if you'll manage the background noise, are there any clarifications or questions that any of you have about anything I've talked about?
Hey, Dave, it's PJ.
Oh, hey, PJ, how are you doing? Welcome.
I'm doing great. I wanted to say this was excellent. For the first time, I think I was able to clarify the difference between coaching and counseling. Counseling is going on. Problem. Coaching is looking at a new way of seeing something. The other thing I got is, was when we become aware, we can make.
Yeah, this is the roadmap system that we're going to get to that you're familiar with, and the basic macro system of change to recognize, own, assess, and then decide what to change, and then we'll also add the other components. But yeah, that's a great summary. Thank you, TJ, and thank you for your kind words. Your check is in the mail. Okay. other thoughts or comments? Remember to come off mute, star six. We have just a minute or two for anyone. I know it's a lot of material. Go ahead, please. This is, someone began to speak and I talked over you. Would you go ahead, please? Identify yourself. Well, I know this is a lot of material, and I'm always, having the dilemma, I would really rather have a discussion and have a true kind of teaching seminar, but then there's so much information I want to convey. And I know it's being recorded, so you can go back over. But if there are any questions that come up or that get crystallized as you think about this, feel free to shoot me an email, and I'll incorporate it as best I can into our next seminar or discussion. And I really look at the questions, the answers you sent in to the two questions to inform some of what I address. And those are really important to me and why I do this live. To engage with you. So thank you all for your participation. Thank you for those of you especially who have sent responses to me, and I welcome any responses. If you haven't seen it yet, there's an email with the two questions, and I look forward to picking up right here next time. We're going to talk about mastering states of mind and its application for mentor coaching. So have a great rest of the week. Take good care of yourselves, and I look forward to picking up right here. Thanks for all your responses.
Thanks,
Dave.
Dave.
Bye now.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Dave. Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you.